Maybe a good place to start. I think we have a few people with us who weren't with us yesterday. And let me say that Zig got it all on tape. And to for those of you who weren't here yesterday what happened was the teenagers spoke and talked about basically two things, what's good about parents and what ain't. I think from discussions like that I've heard, they covered the waterfront. They usually do. They can get to everything that's part of that whole scene. Ben, this is in your handwriting, and I'd like to ask you to just recap it. Before you get to that, let me say another thing for those people who weren't here yesterday. This is done as an experience for you all who can participate in it here. It's also done, hopefully, as an opportunity for you to see a very simple method that could be used at home in your home parish by getting parents and teenagers together. The one difference that I'd suggest, if you're going to do it there and would have enough parents and enough teenagers to make two separate groups, so you have families A and B, and you take parents from family A and teenagers from families B and put them together to talk, because it's a more open kind of expression that can go on there. You seal them all to confidentiality, and you know what goes on here is for your edification, not to be blabbed all over town. We're not able to do that because we're in part able to do that because there are many teenagers here whose parents aren't around, but there are some parents of teenagers with their own teenagers here, like these two, who I think need to be a part of this. So it could be done at home on 2, 3, 4 Wednesdays in 1 month, or 2, 3, 4 Sunday morning Bible class hours, where the really all you got to do is set it up and tell them to talk about what's good about parents, what's not so good about parents, what's good about teenagers, what's not so good about teenagers. The thought being that that kind of expression will be instructive and will maybe smash a few of the stereotypes we carry around in our heads. And that's an important thing to have happen, because that facilitates living together, it facilitates communication with each other within the family. And I'll repeat again what I said yesterday. I think the most difficult time in the life history of any family is when the children of the family are making a transition from childhood to adulthood. That's the teen years. It's a difficult time for people in those years. It's a difficult time for their parents. That's why we ought maybe to give it some of this kind of attention in a Christian community. So, Ben, why don't you recap a bit what we heard yesterday from the teenagers? And if you want a more, if you want to hear every last word that got said yesterday, Zig has it all on tape, and you can go and listen to it.
Okay, our list for things we like about parents is they're caring, and they're helping, they're understanding, that they'll back you up financially and spiritually. They share and listen, encourage. We respect and admire looseness and non-strictness in parents, their openness to share their feelings with us and ours with them, and to be able to talk to them and not have to hide things from them. Negative things about parents was they're over-caring or too much protection, the generation gap of things are different now, our expectations and their imperfections, the way they discharge their anger, such as picking bad times or repeating things that should have been left dead a long time ago, bombshelling, getting things over with, and their unpredictableness, and pulling rank, copping out, poor excuses, and that they don't honor our judgment many times. We also had not listening, and always wanting our details, and when we ask them for their details, they won't give them to us. Impatience, lack of judgmental respect, no thanks, and focus on the negative.
So there are more sins of parents than simple Rotarianism. Okay. Now let's allow the parents to speak for a time, and let's start with what's neat about teenagers. Well, maybe the parents should identify what brand of teenagers they got. The teenagers didn't have to identify, they all had parents that they were talking about yesterday, but just it might add a bit to the clarity of what we're saying if we say what kind of teenagers we got. This one is mine, he's my youngest, he's 18. I have another one who's 19, daughter, and then one who recently escaped the teenage category and is 21, son.
We have three boys. We have one that's almost 15. We have one that's 13 up here. The older one, he didn't want to come. We got one that just escaped out the door, but he's only four.
Okay.
We have a boy, 9, and a little girl, 6, but we're the senior Luther League advisors for our church, so right now we have 14 of them up here.
You're surrogate parents for 14 teenagers.
Right.
Other parents? Nope. Pass.
Okay. I have 3 children, 1 18, 1 16, and 1 15.
Beautiful.
Right in the middle of adolescent.
Uh-huh. And you got the same age differential as in our family.
We have 2 children. We have 1 teenager, a 13-year-old boy, and 10-year-old daughter.
Okay.
Like Terry, we have 3, 18, 16, 15. 2 of our kids are here. We're here with 10 other kids from Augustana.
Surrogate parents for 10 more. All right. Well, let's start with what if anything is good about teenagers?
I think it's rather interesting now that they're able to express more independence and maybe testing a little bit of the trustworthy aspects of a personality.
Oh, as they get older, you mean?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we see this more, or we've detected it more at our house within this last year. You know, I wouldn't say that it necessarily comes immediately upon the time that a child reaches the age of 13, can be classified as a teenager, but it seems to have made itself much more evident at our house. And this is a rather interesting, you know, it's not a buddy-buddy system, because I don't go for this. I think that, you know, you're still a parent. You're not trying to be a teenager again. But I think it is interesting when a young person, you know, he's not a kid anymore.
Yeah, you find yourself being addressed by one who is not taking a child stance towards you,
mm-hmm.
who's taking maybe not an equal, but
yeah.
more equal than before.
Shift from elementary to junior high seems to bring this out.
Seventh grade is the place where it happens, huh?
Mm-hmm. We're discovering it.
Okay.
I think one of the things that has become real apparent to me is, as I see adolescents grow, is the sense of responsibility that I'm feeling and seeing they're taking in various aspects of living, whether it's for themselves or for other friends. I really appreciate that.
Fill that in a little more. That's interesting. But what kind of responsibility?
Well, I think as younger people, they're more self-centered. And as I see this maturity in years, I'm seeing that they're getting a sense of reaching out beyond themselves to others and doing this really out of, I think, a sense of their own needs that maybe develop. Maturity and this sense of responsibility, befriending others, assuming more work responsibilities, learning. You know, it's interesting to see kids when they bring the books home, is that they open them up themselves, that I don't have to crack the whip and just say, hey, let's hit the homework before you hit the tube. And that's really neat to have that happen.
I think I'm hearing two things. A sort of burgeoning, growing responsibility, taking of responsibility, and also then some idealism. Am I hearing idealism there too? You're seeing a concern beyond oneself.
Well, I guess I saw that as responsibility. I suppose it could be put into an area of idealism. But I think taking responsibility, we had this the other day, my brother's keeper, you know, I think I'm seeing more of that. Teenager.
Okay.
Reaching out beyond themselves.
I guess along with what he's saying, in fact, to expound on that a little bit, I see that the kids live in a much more complex society than I did when I was growing up. Of course, my children are in a larger city where I was in a small town. But there's so much more pressures that we didn't have, and I think it's neat that they can cope with these pressures, the drug problems and such as this that are all around them, yet they can cope with them and put up with the many different pressures they have. I think they're really neat for that, being able to go along with the many pressures that we had pressures, but not as severe as they are today. And just the fact that they cope with them is really neat to me.
Any further? We run out of good things to say about teenagers.
I think it's rather interesting that as they get to be a little bit older, that they can see maybe more in the personality of their friends. Maybe this just comes with you know, singling out and they're with a smaller group as they get older, instead of not, you know, not every boy in the class. Type situation. I think this is shown itself a few times where they can, you know, okay, maybe they'd like to have everything that a friend has, but then can narrow it down and say, gee, you know, maybe he really is kind of spoiled. Maybe I don't need to have everything that this friend has. And they can realize this without coming in. You know, if you really love me, you'd give me this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in the maturing process, they're able to accept it. I don't, maybe they don't like it, but they're accepting it.
Well, I think if you give kids a rational reason, like we've even opened our checkbook and our savings book to the kids and said, this is why you can't have the motorbike. Look at what we have, 39 cents left in check. You know? I mean, you know, I think it's neat to be really open with kids and to give them the facts and not hide things. I really enjoy the friendship of our teenagers the older they get. You alluded to it. If Terry's traveling or whatever, you know, Beth and I can go downtown and just have a good time, or the kids, the boys, or anything. You know, I enjoy this as they grow older. They're accepting me as another human being, not their mother particularly, you know. But I mean, there's a friendship over and above the relationship of mother and child that I really enjoy, and I treasure it. I think it's fun to see the kids mature also in getting to know and being socially adept with other family, the aunts and uncles and the grandparents, the writing letters to them, the sensitivity to other people, the warmth and the response to them, you know. And I think to see them develop as social, caring beings is real exciting to me.
And being able to relate to other adults,
yes,
as you're saying.
Yeah.
And part of the, I think, piggyback on that, part of the ego trip for me as a parent is to see developing in my kids some of me, you know, some of what I I've been interested in sometimes what I prize about myself. There's another side to that, you know. I also see developing in my children things that I don't prize in myself, or things that get bent out of shape sometimes in me. To finally have a son who likes sports cars and who will understand that, you know, his older brother and sister, you know, point A to point B is how they see automotive equipment. But this guy understands a little bit, and that just really delights me. That's just one small example, I think, of part of what's, okay, I call it an ego trip. I guess that's what it is. Myron was talking about it in the earlier hour this morning. To believe on the part of the parent that this really is my child. I know what's there. I know what I can expect in terms of responsibility taking. It's a great relief when we see it begin to happen, right? But some of that parental faith, I like that idea. For the parent to have some faith in this child. That doesn't mean that we think they're always going to do everything right, but we've got to operate on that faith, and then our faith is not always destroyed. Sometimes it is very, very gratifyingly fulfilled. And that for me as a parent is a major kind of payoff. I still maintain that if we as parents, you know, when you think about becoming a parent, what you're after is a baby, you know, one of those nice little warm, cuddly things that everybody thinks is so wonderful. And if you knew that what you're going to get is a teenager, I think it's best that parents be somewhat uninformed about the whole process. Otherwise, they'd never get themselves involved. I'm kidding, partly, but only partly. Being a parent really is, it's a giving and a giving up kind of operation. We didn't realize that when we got into it. We thought it was a getting. We thought we were getting something that was going to be nice to have. Really, it's just the opposite of that. Being a parent is a giving and a giving up.
That's why it's good that we go through all these phases, though, to meet the teenage years a little gradually.
Yeah, slowly. I'm forever amazed and stand in awe of people who adopt teenagers. Because I think they're stepping in to a point in that in life there that is not at all an easy point to step into. I made it because I made it, you know, one day at a time, over a long period. If you're raising your own children, you have 12 years plus 9 months of anticipation to get ready to be the parent of a teenager. Nobody's really ready when it happens, but you have a long time and a long process and a long relationship to get you ready for it. So I just stand in awe and amazement at people who are ready to adopt teenagers into their family. Not because teenagers are so terrible. Please don't understand me that way. I'm not saying that. I think it's a tricky number to do, a difficult number to do, a very demanding number on the parent. So, anything more that we can think about our teenagers that we think I really need about them?
In going along with what you just said there, that first the 9 months and then the 12 years, we're at the ninth year right now with our oldest. But as I saw it a year ago when we were asked to take over the youth group, I was looking at it in respect where, you know, you have this 12 years and you build up, the child has this dependency upon you. And one way I kind of look at it is when this child does reach that point around age 13 where I think the child possibly is going to reach that point where they're no longer dependent on you anymore. And they realize that fact possibly a lot sooner than the parent realizes the fact that the child does not need that dependency anymore. And the shock, this is what I'm kind of looking forward to, is to recognize that when that time really is going to come, where I have got to realize where my child is not that dependent on me anymore. And he has reached that point where he can be, not per se, turned loose and, hey, now you're 13 years old, you're a teenager, it's, the world is yours, go do it. But that transition, when's the initial time when this is going to happen, for the parent to, like I say, the child reaches that point, I think, first. And sometimes it's kind of a shock for me on the parents.
There's both a good side and a bad side to that, isn't there? There's a, oh, finally, he can do it himself now. I don't have to do it for him. If he wants to go somewhere, I throw him the keys to the car and he goes. And I don't have to cart him anymore and then go back and pick him up. If he needs some clothes, you give him the credit card and ship him off to get it. And I don't have to walk in there and hold everything up and see something we all like. There's some relief. There's also some letting go happening.
Maybe the teenage years prepare us to let the kids go. If it was all roses, it might be pretty tough. But
okay. That's the way it has to be. I think you're exactly right, and I agree. What I see sometimes with where there's really big trouble in a family going through this process, what's happening is the kid grows up inside the family, and then he's got to come out and get on his own. And I don't think this sort of process in human behavior ever happens without hurting. It always hurts. Once they're out here, then you can kind of look at each other and become, as you were saying, friends with each other. That doesn't happen abruptly, but that's the nature of the process of pulling out. If it doesn't happen, we have a family that has failed. If it gets all tangled up, we've got a family that's in trouble. But that always hurts. Maybe the most appropriate analogy for that would be birth. Birth hurts too. It hurts everybody, doesn't it, involved. It hurts mother, it hurts child. What's happening is somebody's becoming separate. And then that separation occurs again, all during the family life. Something I like about the teenagers is the idealism has been mentioned, but the strength and the vigor, which I find subsiding in my own person, but there in large measure in the teenagers. Anybody see that too? They're ready to take on stuff that I'm too tired for. And they go at it with the kind of faith and readiness to risk that I have to just stand back and admire. That doesn't end when you become 20 years old. I see that in young people generally. I was talking just the other day about some guy who graduated at our seminary and took over a program that was nothing, and it was an idea in somebody else's head, not even his, and ran with it now for like 3-4 years, and it is really something now. And I'm smart enough that I wouldn't get myself involved in that sort of thing, because I look at that and I say, okay, it's a great idea, but it's going to run on the director's steam for the first 2.5 years. And I ain't got that much steam left. I don't care to spend it that way. But here, he went at it, you know, and grabbed hold and took it and ran it, and now it's a going, it's a service agency in our town. It's a going thing, a very important one. I see that kind of readiness to risk and strength and for the task at hand, and that I find highly admirable and wonderful. Have we run out of good things to say about teenagers?
Oh, I think there's one more.
Good.
I can remember, or I think back, as to when the kids were younger. And when you're entertaining your friends, okay, you teach them that it's polite when they enter the room to say hello, Mrs. So-and-so or whatever. Okay, now as they get older, they can accept your friends as you accept theirs, and you make their friends feel welcome at the house. And it really makes me feel good when, you know, when I've been out to lunch with a couple ladies or something and we've stepped back to the house. And I don't have to say, you know, hey, come on, stop a minute, they're talking to you. But, you know, have them just come in and readily say, well, hi. And that he feels at ease with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think this is a giving on his part.
Mm-hmm.
But it means something to me.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, mothers are always supposed to be there with the cookies and the pop and, you know, clean up the mess after they've tracked through and this type of thing. you know, but then when our friends are there, the kids act like, you know, this is pure boredom. And I think for the kids to come in and you know, treat our adult friends as people, I think this is a little bit of the growing up. Maybe because I've complained a couple of times that, you know, hey, you know, I don't walk around here and ignore your friends. So then, you know.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I got one more thing.
Fine.
I really think that without our adult world realizing that, I think teenagers are doing more and doing it better. And I see that in the world of academics. I see it in the world of athletics. I think that it's also occurring in the world of socialization. Maybe that's what you're alluding to in your example. But I see a stretching that maybe no other teenage generation has had to deal with. In fact, they're kind of pioneers in this very complicated world. And I think a goodly number are faring very well with that. I think that there are some that are getting clobbered with it too. But I see kids really doing some neat stretching and growing.
Yeah, I have to say that hard as I worked in high school, my teenagers learned more in high school and came out of high school better equipped for life and better equipped educationally. They got better things and made better use of it than we did in high school. We'll give the teenagers in the room now a chance to ask questions if there's anything that needs further clarifying.
Yeah, one more thing.
Oh, okay.
Well, I think teenagers can really be helpful and take responsibility in around the home, whether it's doing yard work, housework, cooking, folding clothes. I really think we probably underestimate it. And something was said yesterday about parents ask you to do something and then you do it and it isn't. You think you do the best you can, and maybe it was not quite the way they would have done it, and they really let you know about it. And I do that myself, but they, when I step back and look, they really are helpful.
Okay. You hear that? Her kids work. He knew I was going to do that. Any questions by the teenagers? Any of this stuff we've said need further clarification? Okay. I'm seeing no wiggles of desire to speak.
A little humorous point when she says that teenagers can help around the house. As of this spring, we have a riding mower. And our teenager is more adept at making repairs and getting the thing to run than Daddy is. And Daddy did repair it one day, and our son came in all excited. Well, good for Dan. So they are helpful.
How about it? The old man could do something, huh?
That was exactly it. We all had kind of a good laugh over them.
Well, we got the lawnmower.
Yes.
The job got done. Well, on then to what's not so neat about teenagers. I really don't think, we need to spend an enormous amount of time on this because I think the teenagers have all heard this before. Well, I'd like the parents to hear it from each other.
I could start with one.
Good.
Really bugs me, and that's I have two teenagers, and something will get done wrong or broken or be some problem, and they'll get together with me between them, and they'll both say the other one did it, and lead me right in between to make a decision, and who am I going to punish, or am I going to punish anybody? And then in our situation, if we nail down that something definitely was done by one of the boys, they'll both decide that the little four-year-old did it.
Yeah.
And it really puts us as parents in a bad light. We don't know which way to go. It really pulls you apart. Who are you going to take after? It's really frustrating.
You mean this has never happened in your house until you had teenagers?
Oh, it's always happened, but this is one thing that...
I think Rotarian solution to that is group punishment, right? which is usually regarded as very unfair.
Well, we do that. We had to do that while we've been here.
Group punishment.
Just last night. We don't know who, but a few wrecked it for the group. But now they have an early curfew. We punished the whole group for what? One or two.
The theory usually is that if you apply group punishment, then the group will punish the known offender.
We figured that would probably happen.
You hope.
There's something that we've been able to see, my wife and I, because we're in a position that we're observing a bunch of teenagers and their parents, and quite a bit. And there's something that we have seen that has really, really bothered us, and that's where a teenager will take and get one parent kind of working against the other parent in my favor. I'll get mom to back me up because I know she favors my idea where dad doesn't. Or I'll get dad to back me up because I know mom's going to shoot me down. And this is done, I think a lot of times I'm afraid the parents, they don't realize it, or maybe they're afraid to admit it, but the kid is, in a few instances, he is really good at this. And he uses it to a great extent, and it works. It works. It really does. And I think they realize what they're doing and everything. But that's something that... Really, it bugs me. I hope my kids, when they reach that age, don't catch on to that knack. Maybe they're doing it already. Maybe somebody's seen that happen.
They're so good at it, you don't even know it.
Yeah.
Or the statement that everybody else can go.
Yeah.
I can't. Everybody else is doing it. And I've come to be very comfortable with the statement, I am not responsible for this person is here. So I am responsible for you, and my relationship is with you and what I do, and this is primary. And for you, this will not happen. I cannot allow this. And I mean, that really stops most of the conversation because you've given them your feelings, the basis for your feelings, and feelings are valid. I think.
So that doesn't just necessarily mean teenagers.
That starts
at a very young age,
school age. Well, it happens real often, though, as a teenager when it's talking about later hours and more freedom and the spending of money. When they are stretching and having more independence, I have felt in our home that it has hit me more when the kids are teenagers than when they were younger.
Along that same line, one thing that really
we hear a lot is, well, all my other friends have an 8,000 horsepower motorcycle, why can't I have one?
I don't think there is such a thing.
That's what they want, the biggest one there is.
How could you get kids to realize that, you know, okay, with a 13-year-old who's planning ahead for being 16, because, you know, when you're 16, everybody has a car. This.
I wish you hadn't said that.
Well, we've had months of conversation on this at our house already, and I just absolutely am not convinced that a 16-year-old needs a car. With two cars in the family, I'm sure there will be most times that at least one car will be available for use. And we discussed it that, you know, if he's proven that he is trustworthy and a safe driver and, you know, has a curfew and all, okay. But they take this that you're lashing out against them, you know, that if you were really, you know, the neat parent that my friend's parents are, then you let me have the car, and you know, and you can't really say, okay, well, you can't have it because we can't afford it. I mean, that's not always the legitimate answer. But did your caring about that person, and that you feel that this is not going to do him any good?
That's what
I'm saying. But you're not being mean. I mean, it's not just the fact that, okay, I hold the purse strings as a parent, and I'd rather spend it on something than a car for you. But that you're caring about that person as an individual, and that I really don't see that the car is going to help them, at least not, you know, until 18.
That's going back to what she just said. Because most 16-year-olds, like you say, they get their license, they want a car. But you could, you know, say, hey, we, you know, you're not everybody, and, you know, we have two vehicles, and, you know, it's not that you're going to be limited on driving a car.
Mm-hmm.
How about the instance, though, where the you know, it means so much to this teenager. At that point of 16, he has his driver's license and he wants a car. And where they come at you with, this is something I heard, where if I can earn the money,
mm-hmm,
and buy the car myself,
mm-hmm,
you know, will you let me?
I still say no. Because I just think that the grades go down, and it, they're in the car from the time they get out of school until the 11 o'clock curfew.
Yeah, this is very interesting to me, because something we heard yesterday from the teenagers is they don't trust us.
Mm-hmm.
And what are we hearing now from the parents?
We don't trust them.
No, no.
No, it's not.
We're hearing that the teenagers don't trust our motivation.
Right.
You know, our motivation is so good and pure and fine. We want only the best for them. Therefore, you don't get a car, which is the one thing in the world he wants.
Yeah.
And they're not believing our motivation, huh?
Yeah.
As parents. So it's a, you know, the trust issue flops both ways, it seems.
Because the issue was raised. Okay, if I can prove that my grades will stay up. No, but that still isn't the whole issue.
It sounds like the teenager can't win that one.
Well, no, when a child is 16, I think you still have the right to have things that are not negotiable. And I would be with you. It wouldn't be negotiable at all that my children would have a car at 16. None of them have, and none of them will.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other things in a relationship and a family that are negotiable. You can work out things. A car is not. And for me, I could just state these to the kids, and that they would have no other recourse than to live by that, because that is the rule.
That's their
age 16, that would not be negotiable to me.
Do parents always have to have, you know, I don't go along with this, okay, you have to take my word because I am the parent. I mean, there should be room for discussion.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, but sometimes I get to the point where I'd like to say, there is no discussion. I mean, just, I've said it, that it dropped, you know, well, sure, the conversation has ended, but the kid walks off in a stew, and who is it that hurts? It's the parent.
Yeah, true.
Yesterday we heard that the kid, this really bugged him, and we'd say, that's
it. Yeah, I know it. There's nothing that bugged me more.
This got labeled yesterday.
Yes, it did.
Pulling rank.
That's exactly what it is, but I mean, you get to a stalemate where you can't expect them to reason and to think as an adult does. I didn't think this way when I was a kid.
But as parents, can't we have, I hate to use the word rank,
but hopefully a little wisdom is coming of age.
No, I don't like the word power either. But I think there are areas where a parent has an obligation to exert, you know, pressure and say, this is it, you know. Now, with my 18-year-old, I could be very unhappy that he have a car, but I would feel less strong in my I don't think I would come across as strong to my 18-year-old on not having a car because of his age, as I do the 16-year-old. Really, I, you know, as strong. But a 16-year-old, I feel I could be very strong. And I think it's important not just to say you can't have it, but why. Hit them with your feelings. I'm worried about this and this, and I'm concerned about this. And for you, at this age, it shall not be. So that you give them reasons.
Can we complete the other side of that transaction, though, and really hear what kind of feelings are involved for the kid with that car? I was hearing before from the parents, you know, well, there's two cars in the family, and there will be one around most of the time, and the kid is thinking, oh, God, but, you know, it's that really Dutchy-looking light blue station wagon, and the old man won't let me jack up the back end. Because he says he throws him over the steering wheel or something. It's the wrong car. Besides, it's not my car. I think for lots of parents, particularly fathers, the business about the car is understandable. It is for me, because that's where I was as a teenager. You know, saying the same things that the kids are saying to parents today. If I can prove to you that my grades stay up, if I earn all the money myself, if I pay for my own insurance, which is going to be astronomical, you know, if, then can I please have the car? No.
Why not give
them
a chance to see that? I mean, you're going by your ideas of what you think or the parents would be. All right? You got to give your kids the freedom of choice.
Mm-hmm.
Try to, you know, if this thing's going to motivate them to be in a car, maybe it'll change a little. And really, really work for them.
Attach some contingencies to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, like grades and that. I mean, it gets motivated to do.
Yeah.
Or to get a job.
That's a solution that's sometimes used, yeah.
What if the grades go down and then you've got about, what, $4,000 a day?
How do you figure? That's what we paid for the car?
Yeah. What do you do? Mm. Yeah, the grades go down.
How do you go about far away?
You don't.
And they've thrown it through the window, so you take the toy away as well. Or giving the child a toy.
And we're not dealing with children, little children. We're dealing with young adults.
And a car isn't a toy.
A car is a toy.
Yeah, not a parent back here.
I have four children who were teenagers, just a short 22 year old. The youngest is 20 now. And the older kids are the ones who had to maybe train me in listening and understanding. And somehow, now that I look back, I made way too big a deal of a lot of things that I didn't have to. And I think sometimes my kids were a whole lot wiser than I thought they were. And I was glad they made a few mistakes while they were still home, so I could help them with their mistakes. Had I put on the brakes too tight, they would have been gone making the same mistakes. and I wouldn't have been around to help them. So I feel for my giving in. I was there when they needed me instead of letting them make those mistakes after they were gone and I couldn't help them in a lot of areas.
So what you're saying is your kids had cars at 16.
If they could pay for them and if they could pay for their own insurance and if they could be totally self-sufficient on it. There was a repair that had to be made. It sat until they had the money. Yes. Yes. To make the repair, but it was a learning experience. If they had a little accident because they were foolish, they paid the price. I didn't help them with the money. I helped them deal with their actions, and what it took with it. The car was that big a deal. It was a learning experience.
I think with a lot of teenagers, it's not just the car, but it's seeing what your parents are going to let you do. You know, I wonder if they'll let me have a car. It's not maybe that I need or want a car so bad, but it's that responsibility that I wonder if they'll trust me with. And for them to say, no, it's not that I'm not going to have the car, but okay, they don't trust me. They're pulling rank. I'm going to, go out and steal one.
Now, one of the things I found that if they didn't come in on time because after they had their wheels, that pleased me without my requiring it, and they'd be older when it's a pattern, they'd call me up and say, Dad, we live in Oklahoma City, we're with a bunch, and it looks like it'll be about this time, is that all right? Wasn't a requirement, but they appreciated flexibility enough where they gave us that consideration. So we didn't sit.
There is a proverb that probably ought to belong to parents. Good judgment comes from experience, and experience comes from bad judgment. All of which says there's going to have to be some mistakes made. That's how people learn.
We have a neighbor boy that will be a senior this year, and he right now has two cars in their yard, a Volkswagen that he's trying to sell, and then an older car. But I'll bet that boy spins. Well, I know every Saturday he's out there and Sunday out there with that car probably 5 or 6 hours a day, either tinkering with it or polishing it or cleaning it or something. And he bought his own car, and he's paid for everything. But that maybe is worth something, too.
I think something to be stated here is when a kid gets a car, I think parent has to go along with them and buy the car, help them buy the car, because he can come home with a rust bonfire and he breaks with burning 10 quarts of oil. And you can stipulate the economic value of that car. If you feel the car isn't safe until it costs $3,000, you can state that to the kid. If you feel safe with him driving a $300 junker, you can state that too. But it's the value of the car that you feel you would trust your child driving, and his ability to fix the junker up, or if you feel he has no ability to fix that, then you can say, well, you have to get a $2,000 car before you can own a car, and that will naturally mean you'll have to wait longer to buy a car.
You'll have to be 18 by the time you get
there. That sounds good.
We've gotten into cars a bit. Are there other things about teenagers that are not so neat? I think just maybe if I can pull together, cars are more than cars is what I'm hearing. It's a symbol of other things. It's a symbol of trust. It's a symbol of independence. It's a symbol of all kinds of things. It's a symbol maybe even of adult status for the teenager. To have your own car, in some sense of the word, means you have become a, quote, real person. That's part of what makes it so attractive. But are there other things about teenagers? You got just a couple minutes.
Impatient.
I find that usually on the parental side at our house. Would you agree? But please.
I find it in the teenager. Whatever they want now.
not willing to wait. And I think this gets under my skin perhaps more quickly than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not too patient either, perhaps. But
this would be expressed in the car business again, wouldn't it?
That
you know, the desire for a car is such that this afternoon is not too soon.
Mm-hmm. Should have been done yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Or as she was saying here, everyone else is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I want to do it now. I'm old enough now.
Mm-hmm.
Now is the time. No longer do I have to wait.
There's a paradox of teenagers, too, with their emerging independence, and yet how often they fall back to wanting to be waited on. You know, they've got the two wheels, the 10-speed bike, and they would go on that downtown or to their friends 3 miles away, but to go on a little shopping trip or take me to the store or something, you know, they want that from me or from Terry, you know, and I think that they could do that themselves, you know, and they want to be picked up here and there. When we're in a small town, I think they could walk. They could have planned better and had their bike. And that's me.
Or like the phrase that we get so often, Mom, don't treat me as, you know, don't treat me like a kid anymore. But yet he never makes it to school. He absolutely does not wake up to his normal alarm clock.
Mm-hmm.
Until I, you know, and out the door, into the car, and halfway down the street, and the lunch is sitting right on the counter. Well, right past it, and then, you know, the notebook is here, and then calling from school that, oh, I forgot my PE equipment. You know, it's they can't decide.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and still sometimes, okay, we like to have them come and cuddle up on the Davenport. Oh, Mom, you know, I'm your sweet little boy again. And still saying, don't treat me like a kid.
Is there really being a kid if you forget your books at home?
Oh.
That's not being a kid, but when you do it all the time.
How old is your son?
13.
Uh-huh.
If you're 17, you don't do that at all.
No, I think just as adults, heck, you forget stuff too.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's true. But it's being, you know, it's regressing. Those morning hours, okay, you're not awake. And our son happens to be a late sleeper. I mean, he would like to stay up all night and can easily sleep till noon. And so this, you know, pulling out of bed and getting off to school in the morning gets to be kind of tedious. This is day after day, and, you know, this is the time he started school. So that time of the day, really like to be about a 7 or 8 year old. No, Mom's a little boy because Mother will have all this stuff ready.
Oh, I want it ready too.
Yeah.
Mom's other little boy.
You know, but after school, then you want to be the 13-year-old because you want the freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. To go into. So you see this conflict, I mean, within the child. And I was the same way while my mother was still living. There was nothing I liked better than to take off a weekend, leave Myron home with the kids, and I would go to a class.
And
because
be a little
then
girl.
I was mother's daughter again. I didn't have to worry about fixing the meals. Mother would fix exactly what I loved to eat. So it's the same, you know.
All right. Comments from the teenagers. Did you learn anything this morning?
Well, one thing I think, after a lot of generalization by the teenagers, and I think, maybe because I'm older, and I find that I maybe have a little different situation. I consider that when you're considered more of an individual, like me, for instance, with that car business, I went through the same thing. And I've heard a lot of, you know, generalizations like your grades will go down if you have a car and different things like that. And there's individuals who have cars that, you know, have excellent grades, and, you know, teenagers that can afford cars, you know, and there's teenagers that cannot. I wanted a car, and I wanted one really bad for a long time, but Then it occurred to me that I'd have to make some decisions. If I wanted to go to college, I couldn't buy a car. And, you know, it was my choice. So, I don't know, I think you have to really look at, know your child as more of a person, and know him as more of an individual, and treat him that way. Let him, don't say, well, teenagers can't afford a car. Look and see how, you know him, and if he can afford a car, there's situations that, you know, he can, and there's teenagers that can't.
Yeah. I think this car thing, I mean, there's, well, at least one or two more things in teenage life than cars. And a car thing is, well, it's one of the biggest illusions of your life. But, you know, before you have your license, you know, it's, you know, big thrill. And then as soon as you get your license, you know, well, what am I going to do with it, you know? It's not, I mean, your car isn't your life. It's just a convenience, you know. I mean, you're going to live without a car. I think most people, you know, most, after you get your license, it's not that big a deal, you know. I mean, you're not going to be in your car after school until 11 o'clock. You know, it's no big thrill. It's just that before you get your license, it seems like it's going to be, you know, you're going to be great in your car.
But
it's not really like that.
You're believing before you get the license that it's really a great, huge deal.
Yeah.
And when you get the license or get the car, it kind of shrinks down,
yeah, you know,
back to size.
It's nice to have a license.
It becomes another thing,
it's
among...
not the entire teenage life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or until you get tired of following your fellow teenagers in love, who never help they forget.
I'm not a teenager, I'm not a parent, but I've been a teenager, and I've watched all my little brothers and sisters go through the teenage years, and worked with teenagers. And what I find a lot of times, I'm sorry myself, was what I needed more than anything else was a sense of value and belonging. And the sense of belonging that I got at school was different than the sense of belonging at home, because at home I wanted to be independent and wanted to be worthwhile because of who I was inside at school. I just wanted to fit in and be like the crowd, you know, even though you don't let other people know that you want to be independent and cool at school, you still want to fit in, you don't want to be weird. But if the kid is given some sense of value and responsibility at home, then some of these other things don't need to be such a big issue. But it's when there aren't any other kinds of values and self-value kind of thing that he can do at home that some of these little things become the sporting field for this kind of thing like the car. Now that's where the kid picks a point. Now this is where I'm going to prove my manhood. This is where I'm going to prove I'm a grown up. This is the point. And you got a big battle. And the car doesn't have that much to do with the battle. The battle is something else. And so if there's ways, and sometimes that's really difficult because it depends on where you live. If you live in the middle of suburbia, sometimes it's really hard. If you live on a farm, the kid's had things to do and stuff since he was a little kid. But I think a parent, that's one of the hardest places that a parent has to do, because he has to be able to provide some of those senses of value, senses of accomplishment. That
well said. Good note to end on.